When in Sydney, Frankenfurter chooses to stay at the Boulevard Hotel. On this very special episode of Frank and Open Discussion, the lads frankly and openly discuss their latest single, Watcher on the Wall. Listen to the podcast, then listen to the song, then listen to the podcast again. It's two for the price of one.
Frank and Fido recently has put out a track called Watcher on the Wall. History is very interesting for this track because Dean actually came to the studio with a... a rough sketch. Horrible version.
It was, yes.
But the structure was there.
I think it was quite funny because Ben asked me to, like, sing what I thought it was, and then his wife, Renee, came in and said, "Are you trying to kill something?"
That sounds like something she would say.
Yes, which I thought was harsh but fair. But, yes, I remember there was three Ben, Jeff and I.
Didn't you post it on a Slack first?
I did play something on piano originally, yeah. And then I brought it in and we did a rough jam, originally in C minor, because that's
the saddest of all keys.
It's one of my favourite keys to play in. And I think the next day Ben put it down a half step into B minor, and then put it one beat off, and that was basically it. He recorded a little demo, and that was the guts of the song.
Yes, and then it got cravened up.
It got very cravened.
I like the Crosby, Stills and Nash bit that we had in the beginning.
Well, we still have that. We still have that in the first verse.
Okay. I don't think it's enough of it. I think it's been diluted from the original demo, which I really love that demo.
Maybe that'll see the light of day somewhere.
Yeah, expanded edition. On the re-release, the expanded version.
Well, honestly, the bonus tracks, we have essentially got a 20-minute version of Watcher, right?
This is true. Like, the way that song evolved is it had this, amazing middle section referred to as the war section.
The war section, yes.
The war section. We went in this crazy kind of, just off kilter beat, War of the Worlds type thing.
Well, it's a combination of disco and whatever.
I think we had a couple of good jams where we tried out some different ideas there, and I hope that some of that sees the light of day.
So we've got those, and you've identified. In fact, you have identified a particular jam as, yep, nailed it. That's the one, right?
That's it. Yeah.
Yes, a very good version, which I thought we should.
At least the middle section was a very good middle section.
Yeah. Yeah. What's interesting is that this song, we normally just come in and jam and hopefully we get something, but this one was just, nope, I'm bringing it in from outside, here it is, basically complete, and we just took that, which is completely opposite to what we normally do.
I think it's the John Anderson Yes way of working, where John will bring in the song and Yes grudgingly says, well, I suppose, John, if we have to play this song, perhaps we can do this, and perhaps, we can change this chord to a different chord and so on.
So we'll do something, and then you can get to craving it up.
And then, perhaps we can totally move the lyrics out by half a bar.
We didn't change all that much, I have to say, though.
No.
It was pretty much how it was, right?
Yeah.
And then it did get in the arrangement, production of it, quite a lot happened, but it was pretty much how it was.
There was definitely a nod to the 80s in the production.
Yes.
Just like our first single.
And I think that's not a lot of people are doing that, probably for a good reason, but one of those reasons is they don't know how.
Mm. But we didn't add any gated drums. You wanted 80s production.
Yeah, but I don't want bad taste 80s production.
Ah, okay.
One song that did come to mind for that was Dream Academy.
Life
in a Northern Town. So that, yes, that
I
could
don't
be
hear any resemblance.
Well, that's good.
Hey, oh, 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 oh.
I mean, you've got the wind effects, you've got the acoustic guitar sort of thing.
Life in a Northern Town.
And I must say, we've also got the 2-3 minute intro to that song with the keys and guitar.
That was a bit sticks.
The keys reminded, Fleetwood Mac.
Well, originally it was supposed to be kind of Fleetwood Mac sort of song.
That was Malcolm, our keyboard player, we asked him to record an intro, and that was pretty much what he came up with. In fact, the major contributions was Ben's arrangement of the harmonies and those things, and the changing of because it used to come in after the beat, and you made it come in, watcha.
I was, yeah, and look, I definitely, there was a channeling of Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
And it was, was it Rhiannon?
Yeah.
It was a channeling of the electric, of the Rhodes keyboard in Rhiannon. Yeah.
Such a great sound. Actually, and there's the sort of riff that is at the start was a Jeff contribution.
Jeff's riff, yes.
Yes, it was Jeff's riff.
Which, I mean, look, sounds like something, but it isn't.
That's me in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So not quite as good as you think it is.
What is that? No, it's not that.
It's not Jeff.
That. It's not that. Shit, it's new.
It's Jeff.
But
it's
familiar.
Familiar.
Mm. So it's more original than Ed Sheeran.
Although we do have this long 20-minute arrangement, and I've been thinking that keyboard bit that you just discussed with Malcolm, I'm starting to think now, you know what? It's a bit Brothers in Armsy, and it doesn't really...
I think that's good. It is a bit your latest trick.
No, it's like, well, but whatever it is, I'm starting to think it doesn't really add anything.
Well, I think you're wrong.
I think
it should start with the vocals.
I think it's special.
The original first cut that Ben did had it opening with keys, and then we went straight for the... Like, we had to chop some, and it came in with the cold open. Mm. Straight in the lyrics, and I like that much better, I have to say.
I like it much better with Ken starting.
Yeah, yeah. So straight in the vocals. Like, I like that bit, and I thought it was interesting.
Maybe two tracks. Like, here's the prelude, which is your sticky bit.
It could be something we do if we play it live, maybe. Right. I don't think it, like, needs to necessarily...
That's an idea.
Yeah, but to play it live, you have to plan the arrangement. And the best way to do that is to record it.
True.
And then learn it.
There's the rub.
Because we have to learn something.
Yeah, I mean, look, they don't spontaneously come up with these, you know, these long songs. They come up with little bits and it's a jigsaw and they piece together and you record it and they learn. That's why when they play it live, it's so much better because they've had to sit down and learn all the stuff they've
pieced
together.
The essence of that opening song is just improvised over the verse chords.
No, right? I think it's quite good.
It is good. I like it. I think it was a good song. There was a lot of, I think everybody contributed to that in their own little way. It was good.
I do like the instrumental middle bit though, which we haven't released anywhere.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Especially it is
when
really
Ben
amazing.
Comes in with this really psychedelic version of the opening guitar riff at the end. Oh yeah.
So what? Wow. Yeah. What,
so
what
cool,
is? What is?
No one's heard it.
What is appealing about this song is that it has so many influences that we're not shy about revealing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's all comfortably numb at the end.
Oh, of course it is. Yeah. So
very comfortably
you've
numb.
Got so much. So much reference, it's referencing so much stuff, and if you listen to it again and listen to it multiple times, you'll start to that's a nod towards that, a nod towards that.
When the halftime, so that was another thing you added, the halftime drums that came in,
right?
What was the influence there?
Well, that's clearly Nick Mason.
Oh, right, because it was like too fast for him and he wanted to slow down.
Well, no, he has two ways of working. He has halftime and full time, and if you do that on a song that you would not normally think of going halftime, you're missing out.
I thought it was a genius move. I also liked how we come back to the halftime out of the chorus. Like, if you listen to it, it's this sort of callback. It was really good. I think the best part for me of that song, though, is the second verse. Harmonies in the chorus is just an excellent, like, high point. In fact, I almost think... Like, it's almost a shame that we didn't go another verse chorus. I think that bit was so good.
Well, we've got a third verse.
We have got a third.
Well, I haven't written it yet.
Yeah. We do. Well, we've pretty much got one. No, we've got one.
When we go to record it, I will.
Also,
we've got one.
Like, the second half of your guitar solo that you faded out to is awesome.
Well, I don't think the four-minute single version does it justice.
We had to keep it short, right?
We did have to keep it short, but there's, like, a lot of good...
This is why I think we should have a live version, or, you know, just in the studio, we'll just jam it again. We have the two verse chorus bits, the middle section, the longer guitar solo. You know, we did it once, it was about 13 minutes, none of this keyboard stuff at the beginning, and it sounded great. And we just put it out somewhere as, you know, just a YouTube video or whatever. It's like, well, here's the single, but here's the actual real version of the song for you.
I want to record that. No, I want to record that properly.
Yeah.
Because
I just want to play it live.
Yeah.
Well, see, if we play it live, we can do the thing that we did where it just went into the War of the World, into the Red Weed from the War of the Worlds.
Well, that's because, and we can do that live and not have to pay royalties.
We did that. Well, yeah, and went into the wall at one point, and then it went into
Staying Alive.
It was this genius melody thing.
Michael Jackson somewhere.
It was too. Billy Jean was in there.
Yeah, it was a good moment when we played that and went through all those bits. Brought a smile to my face.
I was trying to rip off Ice House in the vocal.
Were you trying, or is that something I noticed as well?
Oh, like once she said, "Hey, that's it." I thought, yeah, that's it. And I sort of tried to aim for it.
Because I noticed it's a bit Bowie.
Bit Bowie.
Yeah. But the second verse, it's got the Ice House chugging guitars in the background, right? That's the thing. You listen to Electric Blue. If a boy had it, dun, 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 dun. So they always do that. The guitars are just going chug, 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 chug. So that's. There you go. Nod to Ice House.
That wasn't in the original. Like, I seem to recall it wasn't in the original version you did. Like, you added this, like, extra guitar, like, rhythm guitar thing.
Probably.
Really sort of, like, fattened out the whole thing. It was great.
And that when we turn that up and listening to Ken's vocal, that's Ivor Davies.
Mm. I know. So I was aiming for Bowie, but I got Ivor.
Well, so Ivor aims for Bowie, clearly.
There you go, yeah.
But gets Ivor.
Maybe yeah. Bowie. Why aren't we playing our song and talking over the top of it?
The lyrics, Dean, tell us about the opportunistic
lyrical comedy.
It was a blatant marketing.
I believe that I wrote down a whole bunch of lyrics ideas at one point, and one of them was Watcher on the Wall, which was an episode of Game of Thrones, obvious reference to that.
Game of what?
Game of Thrones. Yeah. Nobody cares about that anymore.
I haven't even seen the last season.
Yeah, don't bother.
No, yeah, people get angry.
Is it that bad?
Not as bad as
The Last Jedi.
I quite like The Last Jedi.
Well, you're a dickhead.
Last Jedi?
Yeah, it's horrible.
The last one, yeah.
I'd like put down some lyrics at some point, and then I was playing something on the piano, and I went, oh, that would go with that. So it was that's how it came about. And I think I originally had...
That's art, kids. That goes with that.
That's genius at work.
I think I did the whole first verse, and I think...
The Suzanne model of writing, this goes with this, goes with that, goes
and I think Jeff came up with an excellent second verse. That's why
what was really interesting to me is when Ben put that clip on that you might see on the YouTubes, and it's just of this these American soldiers just watching a bomb go off and walking towards it. And suddenly the lyrics seem to take this real political overtone.
I did have in mind like the connotation of Trump's wall in that.
I wrote a second verse about Trump's wall.
No, yeah. I put the kibosh to that.
Yeah, I thought that was a good idea. Like,
it was too topical. It'll get outdated within about that.
No,
months.
But it was still general. Obviously, the first verse is about a watcher on the wall being, very upset, looking at everyone dying and... being killed and powerless and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the second verse, my second verse is going to be about the watcher on the wall keeping people out. Not allowed in here. And he's a callous bastard. And I thought that was an excellent contrast.
But that clip pulls it to the modern day, the lyrics.
I don't mind. If someone wants to write a better lyric and they think it's a better lyric, then that's cool.
I thought that Jeff came up with an excellent second verse. I thought it was very good. I like that.
Yeah, it's serviceable.
You're
aware of his work.
You're aware of his work.
Well, see, he's dead now. Now they're watching him, so it twists it around.
Well, that was one of your original concepts as well, right?
Yeah.
It still had to be a twist.
And the middle, the one that we didn't record is, the thing that leads to that.
So that was like...
And that would have a play on the lyrics about the bad guys. It was very clever, I thought.
Tell me about With Our Lives and With Our Lies...
Well, we didn't do that with our lies.
Though people think we did.
That's what I was going to make more explicit.
And
the obvious hook in that song is originally when I wrote it, With My Life, that bit. That was the bit in the chorus where I was like, well, there might be something here.
Jeff's lost interest.
So
he's like a cat.
gathering my thoughts.
So it's I will keep you safe and we will, in the second verse, we will keep you safe.
Then
we will. Keep you sheltered from the storm. With Our Lives was what I had intended, but with our lies actually is quite interesting.
That's what I sung. I sang lies and lives.
That's what I'm going to do in the next verse, which we haven't done, which is about the bad guys and they're feeding you lies.
The backing vocals certainly sound more like lies than lives. And that is just the way I sang it, possibly with a...
It's a Mondegreen. I deliberately wanted to create a Mondegreen.
Create
controversy.
A Chris Squire way of pronouncing things as well.
Lives.
We're Chris Squire's choir.
So
exactly.
So a friend of mine picked up on
Chris Squire's silently falling. It was
lie.
A friend of mine picked up on the lies and the lives and said that was the clever bit.
Yeah,
but we didn't actually do it. It was all.
Didn't we?
We it was definitely
the cosmic ballet goes on.
No, but it was definitely you didn't something. Do anything. It was definitely something we consciously discussed, though. I recall lies versus lives.
And then of course
we didn't do it, but we'll take credit for it.
Well, then of course it goes into what you don't hear, which is a huge guitar solo at the end. And I remember there was a lot of discussion about the chord sequence for that. Yes. When do we use a real chord? When do we use a chord with the wrong bass line?
Oh, okay, yes.
And there was a lot of discussion about, you know, this is
too much discussion.
No one cares, but I cared a lot.
I spent a lot of time on the drums for that bit.
That's good.
You can barely hear them, but...
Yes, you can. Well, there's a reason for that.
Well, when I recorded them, I turned them up pretty loud.
I played a revolutionary bass part that's going to, you know, just blow people's minds and how they rethink the instrument, and Ben cut it out and just did it all himself on the bass, on the keyboard.
No, that's not entirely true.
Yes, I didn't have a revolutionary bass part.
Jeff was in the room. That part's true.
I think there was more of my drums on this than
that was a sound of the bass issue. So yeah, and then of course massive guitar solo at the end,
which I think should have been much longer. Wasn't long enough.
No, well you say that, but like when I had members of my family listen to it, they commented the first time, it's too long.
That was the 6-minute version.
But when it was cut down to 4 minutes, they all agreed, yep, that's a good amount.
The 15 minute version,
the not friendly for radio version, I think is interesting, good for us, bit like jazz. Possibly more fun to play. I actually think that's really good to listen to.
I think it'd be something you sit down and... Well, I don't know. You've got two extremes. You either have in the background or you'll get in the zone and listen to it engage in some recreational beverage.
Or herbs.
Yeah.
Do a drug of choice. Legally acquired.
Yeah. I'd love at this point to play Frank and Lotto.
Frank and Lotto.
However, I would say we've run out of time. Why don't we play Watcher?
Yeah.
The recorded version, the real, you know, the single version. We'll play that in lieu of a Frank and Lotto.
Sounds good.
Because Dean has an early start in the morning.
No, I don't.
Watcher on the wall. Can you hear the call? Do you feel the icy breeze? The north wind brings you to your knees. Watcher on the wall. Did you see him fall? See her waiting at the gate. Watch the shadows rising late. It sends a cold chill down your spine to see them helpless on the other side. I will keep you safe and warm, keep you sheltered from the